Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 7, Episode 15, Something They Need. What did they need? Guns? They needed guns.
Lots of guns.
Who's the they?
It's Neo, and he's talking to Tank. And Tank says, what do you need? He goes, guns, lots of guns. And this came whirring through. Racks and racks of guns came through on the backs of these defenseless women.
Uh-huh.
And they took off and flipped them to bird, flipped Trinity to bird.
They sure did. I
felt very conflicted watching this. Like, are the good guys like this? This is just a heist.
Yeah, I mean, like, how much different is this from what Negan's doing to them, right?
I mean, you've got the greater good angle, but that's sure. You know, to Grandma McGee, that angle's probably obtuse. It's not.
Negan also plays that card, right?
Sure, yeah.
We just want everybody to get along, right. Follow the rules, yeah. Work together.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, that's all nice when you say it, but what do your actions actually say?
Plus, Tara's like, "Hey, we'll bring these back when we're done." The garbage people just going to give them back? There's so many assumptions based on this plan, and it seems increasingly like a desperate gamble. I'm actually kind of wondering whether they're going to zig and this is going to blow up in Rick's face.
It could, yeah.
But I don't know. It just seems extreme to go all in on trusting the garbage people rather than maybe spending a little bit more time persuading the Oceansiders who, mm-hmm. yeah, you took them hostage and blew up some shit. And they seem like they really, except for Grandma McGee, be interested in giving you a...
That's a thing. I don't understand why it's an all or nothing here.
Right.
Bring some people in from this group, from uh-huh. Oceanside to Alexandria. And
yeah, like most of the soldiers of this group seem like they were on board. It's just Natanya on top. And, you know...
The one thing I might say is, you know, in defense of that is maybe Negan would know some of these people or... potentially all or a lot of these people.
Oh, so when they're coming to assault his compound and kill him, he'll be like,
No, because they can't just go like, all right, well, we're ready, let's roll.
Yeah.
They'd have to bring them back to Alexandria, and then, you know, they can maybe hide a Daryl, but can they hide
I guess
15
I don't
people
know.
From Oceanside?
I don't know why they would have to. I mean, you say that, but it seems like also they could just you know, you leave a couple of Rick's people there to be a liaison and kind of communicate and train.
Uh-huh.
And then when you're ready to do the assault, you get everybody together.
Well, she won't let that happen. The de facto leader of this place.
But what I'm saying is like
it's not allowing.
And I get it because like there's been many points where Rick's team's been divided, but Rick is got the Rick-tatorship going, mm-hmm. and no one's willing to brook him. So I guess I see Natanya and she seems not impressive in any kind of way, so it's hard for me to understand how she has such an iron grip on the group. But
yeah,
I mean, maybe if I was just seeing stringy wild beard hair Rick coming out of the woods in season 5, I'd think the same thing. So I know that happens. You got a leader and even though you got 5 or 6 badasses in the community that don't agree with them, like there's still a far cry from openly defying them.
Sure, right.
But it still seems kind of like, the Aaron that just wants awesome things to happen seems like she should just get on board, yo.
Yeah, sometimes that Aaron needs to take a step back.
Uh-huh.
And maybe not all the time.
Uh-huh.
Awesome things don't have to happen every second of
no.
the show, but...
I guess that's
true. I'm kind of with you. There's an I want to see awesome things Jim out there too.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Who's waiting for next week, I hope. But this was actually a pretty
I think that Jim's going to be disappointed.
This was actually a pretty good episode, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe Oceanside was the weakest part of it for me, but I think, a lot of those conversations just with Sasha in this cage and conversations between Negan and Eugene, I thought were pretty effective. I certainly found myself.
I do think
watching them instead of trying to pick them apart.
I did like this slightly more restrained Negan.
Yeah,
I say slightly because, obviously, I don't need him to go to like governor levels of boring.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked, you know, just the performance. He was still saying the same stuff and doing a lot of the same mannerisms, but everything was just dialed back 10 or 15%. I felt like it worked a lot better.
I feel like it's because they didn't want him shouting in a concrete box.
Right.
Like, it's too loud. It's too loud, Jeffrey. Take it down.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it was hurting. They were filing union complaints.
The tracks were clipping. It was bad.
Yeah, it's bad. Yeah.
Bad situation for audio. Do you think that's any coincidence that Michael Slovis was the one who directed this episode, and it seemed like it was actually fairly competent.
So if people don't know, Michael Slovis was one of the people responsible for the signature look of Breaking Bad, for example.
Yeah.
He was like the DP of that show.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I felt like things were just a little bit more dynamic, and there were some smart decisions made, and didn't seem like there had to be as much choppy editing, which I've seen a lot this season, which I've always just chalked up to like editing around the questionable directorial decisions.
Right.
So maybe. I was just impressed they scored him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it certainly helped. Maybe he directed, you know, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, JDM, to bring it down just a bit.
Hey, let me show you a couple clips of Bryan Cranston.
Right.
And see how he generates.
Look at the subtlety
he's using here.
But yeah, maybe that helped a little bit. I also don't think it was terribly written this time. So that helps.
Yeah, there is a couple of I want to talk. One of the things I want to bring up is the compounding problem of Eugene and his mannerisms and performance, and how that is just really doing some of these this melodrama between him and Sasha no favors.
Okay, sure. We'll get there. Why don't we get into the recap?
Before we get into the episode proper, boy oh boy, do we have a lot of stuff coming out and a lot of stuff relevant to Walking Dead fans. First of all, we played the last episode of the Michonne Saga from the Telltale Walking Dead.
Right.
That's going to be exclusively for club members later this week. The end of the Storm and Norma saga.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yep, I laughed, I cried, I kissed Michonne goodbye. And we also have a movie podcast for There Will Be Blood, maybe Aliens. And also this Monday we're going to have a full coverage of Scarlett Johansson's Ghost in the Shell.
Yep.
She wrote and directed it and produced it.
She did.
It's a Scarlett Johansson joint.
She designed the silicone bodysuit. She did it all.
And we all I don't know if we talked about this, but we're doing a podcast with Jason Kabasi from the Walking Dead podcast for FX's Legion.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to get your other comic book fandom stuff on. What am I missing? I feel like there's one more thing.
No.
And then, it's getting crazy to see for baldmove.com, because starting the next weeks, we got Better Call Saul coming back, Fargo coming back, and The Leftovers coming back. So that's if you're winding down The Walking Dead and you want to keep following us, we do not stop. It's year-round, and that's what's coming down the pipe. All right. Gross sea zombies are being teased as Tara comes clean in voiceover to Rick about the seaside group being loaded with guns. Carl and Enid talk about, do you remember the people you've killed? And Carl affirms that he does. These zombies that I mentioned, they're pretty Pirates of the Caribbean. They're very Davy Jones crew. They got barnacles shooting out of their face and starfishes coming out of their assholes, which is ironic when you think about it. And like their skin is slogging off, and if you like zombie porn, it's cool.
I do. I thought it was cool.
They're streaming off of a wrecked cargo container ship. Rick says you don't have to feel bad if things go south, and Tara's like, well, too bad, because like I'm totally lying and double crossing people who saved my life, she's going to have a change of heart, which I don't fully understand. We can explore that later.
Yeah.
What's your feeling about them handling this whole Tara coming clean essentially through a monologue to baby Judith and a voiceover off camera to Rick?
Yeah, I don't really like that.
It feels if this was a really tautly written show, but there's some fat. Like we could have used a couple minutes over the last few weeks establishing some of these things, because it does seem a little out of left field for me. Maggie, back at Hilltop, is giving farming instructions to some dumbass with a top knot. You think he's moving in on her? Because I got a little I got some feeling that maybe he's seeing her as the hot mom to be, and she's recently single, and you know he's a hot dude at the top knot, and
yeah, like, maybe.
Do you really think he needs that much tarpon help, or?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't pick up on that vibe. Maybe I'm obtuse, but.
Is he open to uproot her blueberry bush?
Oh, boy. I don't even understand that analogy, but yes, definitely he is.
I thought so. I thought there was some romance in air, and Maggie just kind of smiled and like, nah, you're not. You don't want any of this farming.
Yeah.
You
I felt like she was trying to be a little bit more of a hands-off in this situation. Like, let these people. Right. Figure out some stuff for themselves, you know, help them with the knowledge that I have,
right?
But don't do everything for them, get them involved,
right?
She could have, yeah, spread that tarp out.
Well, she's gonna be laughing at the other side of her mouth when he tarps all their crops and kills them because he doesn't understand exactly what they're trying to do here.
Yeah.
Speaking of blueberry bush, she's got an eye on one she saw outside the walls that might be young enough to transplant. So she's going to go off to do that as Gregory is just going around creepily recording shit in his journal for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
This dude in a suit with scribbling furtive notes, you know, behind everyone's back. It's entertaining. Michonne in some nondescript woods in Georgia, no doubt. Not really Georgia. Fake Virginia, Georgia. Is climbing a tree to take up a spot, awaiting a signal from Tara. Apparently she's establishing some kind of overwatch position, waiting for a signal so she can spring into action.
Right.
Now, we've never seen Michonne be good at shooting.
That's true, 100%.
In fact, they've established that she's not a great shot, but I guess I like the faith. Like, you know who would be really good? Who would be clutch right now?
Hmm.
Sasha.
She would, yeah. She
Sasha up in that tree could do some work.
Yeah. I'd believe it.
Michonne is just reduced to flop sweating when the pressure's on, as we'll see here soon.
Uh-huh.
But whatever, you know, you got to have someone doing stuff with a scope, and she's going to be the one.
Yeah, I felt like this episode they were real deep in their bench. Like, you got Michonne in a tree with a sniper rifle.
Sure.
You got Tara as the negotiator.
They got the long snapper, kick, and field goal. Like, they don't even know what to do.
Gabriel's got a gun? Yeah, who gave Gabriel a gun?
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
It's crazy.
I'd give the gun to the little girl and give her knife to Gabriel. That's more of a fit there.
Yeah.
Aaron and Eric are having a talk. Eric has recently flipped the script on fighting Negan. He's like, I get it. I get why we're out here. That slavery to the saviors is just going to get you beaten or killed.
Yeah.
So might as well fight and die with their boots on. I thought that was pretty good. Jesus and Daryl are also off planting explosives, which we're not quite sure what they're going to do with at this point. They're discussing Rosita and Sasha. And again, I find it frustrating that no one... You know, Jesus is like, oh, I wish I tried to talk her out of it more. But there's no mention of, like, I guess the basic foolhardiness and the fact that if they succeed in the mission, that this could fatally accelerate the timetable.
Yeah.
Since they're fairly recognizable Alexandrians. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I thought they're – I would like to see Daryl and Jesus maybe like – I understand where they're going, but they could really bone us here. We got to move fast. There's a sense of urgency now that we might not have had otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Although they do have some kind of nebulous time limit with the trash people too. Let us see. What else we got going on? Oh, back at the Savior Complex, some rapist comes in to quote-unquote talk with Sasha, gets headbutted for his efforts – then Negan catches him in mid attempted rape and puts a big ass knife through his throat.
Yeah,
for
pig
his
sticker.
Trouble. Yeah, that's definitely a pig sticker, and this guy is definitely a pig. He then sidles up to Sasha and says, "I really admire your beach ball sized lady balls. Upgrade over Carl's watermelon sized little boy balls."
Oh yeah, I guess
gone full beach ball, right? I mean, the average beach ball is bigger. I mean, I'm not saying maybe Carl's a state fair winner, and this is like, you know, not like
a 50-pound
watermelon. Yeah, exactly, 50-pound watermelon, and this is more. This isn't a concert beach ball. This is just, you know, modest, slightly bigger than a basketball. So it's all he didn't specify.
It's true.
But I'm assuming that her lady balls are bigger than Carl's, and gives her four options. Here's my pig sticker. You can try to kill me, but ain't going to work because I'm on my feet and you're flat-footed and I've got the baseball bat right here ready to... Yeah.
Yep.
You can slit your wrist with it. You can wait for Rapey Davey to come back and eat your face off. Or you can kill Davey and work for me. Mm-hmm. That seems like, I don't know, a lot of, I'd say it's a false dichotomy, but it's more a false quadromy. There's four options. There's a myriad of options.
Well, there's certainly an unstated fifth option here, which is I pretend to work for you and I bide my time until I can either escape or kill you.
Or option six.
Which is the option that she chose, right?
I'm going to kill Davey. I'm going to wait behind this door. And as soon as you open it up and saunter in, I'm going to stick you. I mean, there's like all kinds of things.
Option seven, I mutate and I slide out under that door.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. So he quizzes. He's like, I got to know if Rick's in on this little thing. And she's like, oh, no, Rick, you're a bitch. And she does, I guess, a good job covering for him. But I don't have any stock and faith in Negan's ability to read people.
Yeah.
And he's a little bit more cautious and wise in his interactions with Sasha than I've seen otherwise. But mm-hmm. I still don't have any confidence that he's going to be able to correctly figure out the situation. Did you notice he's got a tattoo that says bison?
Bison?
On his bicep.
Is that what he calls his biceps? Bisons?
Yeah, battling buffalo biceps. Bison biceps.
I don't know, man.
What does that mean? On his other forearm, he's got what looks like a tattoo of Rick's gun.
Maybe.
He's just like, really? You know, that's going to be his new Lucille.
So we've
Petunia and Lucille. He's got Lucille on one and Petunia on the other.
Let's say, you know, he collects kind of tattoos of the people that he's subjugated.
Sure.
I mean, maybe he has a tiger tattoo somewhere, and maybe he's met somebody in another community that, you know, it's not out of the question. We got a guy with a tiger here, a guy with a bison.
What's he tattooed for claiming Eugene? Jar pickles or Grimly Gook?
Jar pickles.
Jar pickles, yeah. That's about right.
So we talked not too long ago about this weird rule that Negan had about no rape, right?
Right.
And we were like, how is that possible? What is the circumstance under which there's no rape in here? And it seems like he's fairly serious about it.
Right.
And it seems to be a rule that isn't just designed to benefit him or you know, to it's not like all of his rules are bad.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that muddies the waters with how you feel about him. I still think he's a piece of shit.
Oh, no. It certainly doesn't me, because he's one of those douchebags that defines rape as, like, forcible at gun or knife point, screaming, no, please help.
Oh, sure, yeah.
No other, like, the coercive rape that he does on a nightly basis with his wives,
right?
Not a problem. He's a perfect gentleman. So, like, no, I'm not going to cut. This doesn't conflict how I feel about Negan. He's still a fucking monster.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a monster with just enough lawful evil in him to make him, I mean, I don't even want to say interesting.
I guess, so what is the purpose of that rule within his society that he's crafting here? How does that benefit his plan?
I mean, there's a couple of ways you can analyze it. I guess number one is it makes him seem different, and makes the women that he takes over and offers marriage proposals more, I guess, compliant. That he's got rules and he's just not an animal.
Mm-hmm.
It could be, I mean, I don't know. There could be something in his backstory that makes it like, you know, his mom got raped in an alley or something, and that's just something that's just a personal anathema to him.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, like, he also knows that maybe if he lets the people go wild with raping women, it's going to jeopardize, like, one of the ways he maintains control and power is he controls access to the women, all the good-looking women in the complex. So he uses those as, like, ways to pay people back and non-sexual favors. And if he just lets people willy-nilly rape, then he loses that control.
Well, he seems to have a fairly Catholic philosophy here. He's like shutting down the sexualization of people, right? Like, like he's shutting down any sexual impulse that they would have, because if he's got all the women and rape is forbidden,
right,
there's no sexual outlet for them, right?
Right.
So how does he keep his people at bay?
Maybe he channels that frustration into violence and anger, which he sees as something he can use, you know?
Yeah.
I
suppose you can do that to a point, but I think at some point people's sexual frustration will come out.
Sure. And to be fair, I don't think that he forbids sex between anybody.
He collects all the women, right?
He gets first choice.
First dibs.
Like if
if you
whine and dine one of the women whose men you've just killed, then she doesn't want to get married to Negan, then he'll be magnanimous enough to allow it. But yeah. It's just fucking weird.
Yeah.
It's weird, and it's like I feel like maybe it's a little bit more interesting in the comics, but at this point, it's just this really weird moral picadillo that he's got. But it's like, I mean, it feels like pissing up the rope discussing it.
Okay.
So she gets locked in the cell in the dark with this proto-zombie rapist, and he goes away. Eugene then comes and visits the blanket, and she goes, could you just tell Negan to come back? I would rather have him in here. The man to beat to death, the man that I love, than your fucking mullet. But he's got a blanket, a pillow, water, and a lantern. And she says, what did they do to you? And he says, they're keeping me safe. Mm-hmm. I was delusional, nutting up for the RV raid to help out Maggie. And I was confronted face first with the fact that I'm essentially powerless and still a giant fucking useless wuss. And being here means I'll never have to be in a position where I'm that afraid again.
Yeah. I mean, he understands he's not a brave man, you know?
Right.
Even though he's had his moments, we've seen him shine from time to time. He's not cut out for it.
But here's the big problem.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily – I think Sasha is stupid and she's dumb for allowing herself to be in this position. Like this is entirely foreseeable consequence of the thing that she did, which also might fuck up the group of people that I actually like.
Yeah.
Eugene, I don't particularly like for anything but comic relief, and I feel like the showrunner is leaning on him for comic relief, has kept him in this infantile, backwards-talking weirdo. Like, I can barely relate to the conversation he's having, even though otherwise I might get engaged. Because he's just talking this weird pseudo-military nerd speak, and he's got this weird, crazy affect to him, and I just don't – there's nothing for me to, like, get grounded in his performance. And it's kind of unintentionally hilarious. Like, when they need him to be serious and sell me that there's some pathos here, he can't do it. He can't do it.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess I don't have that same issue with him.
Huh. So you're able to separate and just, like, when he's, like, emoting and, like, you know, choking back tears and...
Yeah, I mean, it's on the face of it kind of silly, but if you kind of, you know, try and brush that stuff aside and say, what is he actually saying here and get to his point, you know, that's buried underneath all the jargon and the just awkwardness, then, yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting conversation. And it certainly clarifies kind of where he stands, you know. In relation to is he an Alexandrian who's just working undercover here, or is he actually part of Negan's compound, Negan's forces? I think at this point, you know, he's fully on Negan's side. He's at least until the tide turns, and then he'll move on to the next side that he can be on.
I just feel like it's giving Bobcat Goldthwait from, like, Police Academy 5 a big speech to give, and they're like, you know, Bobcat, why are you the way he is? Well, you know, my dad used to beat me, and I got this out-of-control substance abuse problem, and, like, I feel real bad about myself, and, like, okay, what the hell? All right, man.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He could be, like, given an Oscar-worthy performance, and I'm like, no, man, I can't get past it. I can't get past your performance.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't know if I could either with that particular mannerism.
Anyway, Sasha says, I can't take you serious anymore. I'm like, Aaron, get the fuck out. Davey starts to come back, but we then cut away to Maggie just hacking at that blueberry bush with her little garden trowel. And Gregory comes up, kind of admits that he's a shit and wants to talk things over and wants to start things anew. And Maggie kind of calls him on every step of the way. Then she kind of relents after he's shown his belly enough to her, and she says, hey, watch my back while I struggle with this bush for another 5 minutes or so. And there's a moment where he thinks about killing Maggie in cold blood, but there's enough decency in him, or I don't know that he thinks he can do it, because I'm like, oh, please try.
Yeah.
Please, because, like, with a half-torn uterus and a garden trowel, she will still hand you your ass, Gregory.
She will.
Sure. But he doesn't, and there's a zombie pops up, and he's like, oh, well, I should defend the pregnant woman, but he's too big of a fucking idiot to do it, so she goes forward to kill The zombie with her garden trowel. Then
this is where things get stupid.
A stealth zombie comes out and attacks him, and he's rolling on the ground with it, going, "Maggie, Maggie, help!" And she's in the background, kind of struggling with this zombie for some
like 20 seconds. She's there. She does. She's an experienced, seasoned zombie killer. She should not be struggling with this one walker.
Her womb is 97.3% torn.
If she can climb out a moonroof in a trailer and she can jump over a fence and lean down to clear some blueberry bushes, she should be able to stab this walker in the head.
You don't know. You're not a gynecologist. You're just talking about your ass.
Essentially has a bowl of Jell-O on its shoulders.
Right?
Like, she could grab it and squeeze it, and it would be disintegrate in her hands. Like, why is she struggling with this?
She could just backpedal slowly, and it would just fall apart like some like an AT-AT walker with all of its bolts taken out. It would just fall apart. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
I mean, it's clearly just to have Gregory fall over and be trapped in the zombie and show that he needs her and he's useless. Like, craft a scenario in which Maggie doesn't look like a buffoon, please.
Right, right. I mean, because, you know, don't think that Gregory needs to roll around in a zombie for 30 seconds. Like, Maggie went a good 20, 30 yards to kill the zombie. She could bink him right away and head back. You know, I kind of agree. Why'd I have to make Maggie Green look borderline incompetent just to sell me being afraid that Gregory's going, I'm not. I was kind of rooting.
Yeah,
like, this would actually solve a lot of problems.
It sure would.
So then there's a group of Hilltop soldiers returning from wherever the hell they're, I don't know, hunting rabbit or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she goes, "Don't mind him. He's just having trouble with his first zombie." And they're like, "Oh, that's not what he said to us." Apparently he's told lots of stories about his zombie killing prowess.
Yeah.
What do you think of The Walking Dead's dipping their toes in dealing with a lying politician, that lying, breaking promise politician? Is there a bit of ham-fisted social commentary going on here with the Gimple?
I suppose there could be. I feel like I wasn't thinking about it in those terms, but
they've really heightened the idiot factor and how brazen he is and like just telling tall tales and I mean, like, I think there's, I'd like to see the story of a skillful, malevolent politician actually out-politicking people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we've never seen that. Like, Deanna was too good, the governor too crazy. Yeah. I thought Gregory might be the oily, slick guy that builds consensuses and cuts your legs out from underneath you. And no, he's not.
No,
he's
the more not. I see of him, the more convinced I am that none of this stuff he's doing is an act. And that he is, in fact, a true buffoon. Like,
but
not remembering people's names, being a coward and weak, just like...
How did he ever run this place, then? Because it seems like it's so transparent. He's so transparently awful.
I think it's just his house. I think, like, he was just like, "Come on in, guys. I got this house and this fence. Mm. I'm going to be the leader because it's my house. But other than that, I'm a buffoon." I don't know.
So we're now back at Seaside. Natanya. Grandma McGee, as I will refer to her henceforth previously. She gets ambushed by Tara, who has really leveled up her stealth skills since the last time she's at Seaside.
Yeah.
She does a piss poor job of controlling her hostages, allowing them to openly defy their commands. Get way too close to her, and this is going to be significant in a scene or two.
If you hold someone at gunpoint, you have to be ready and willing to shoot them.
Right.
You have to. You can't. There cannot be a bluff to call here.
Right, right. Because then, well, and she's trying to do this with a loaded gun, an unloaded gun, we're going to find out.
Right.
So, yay. Cindy comes in, who is, if you don't remember, is the late teenager who saved Tara like 3 or 4 times in a previous episode, and then... Mm-hmm. Risks her community reputation by letting her go at the end. And I was kind of disappointed that it seemed like she suffered no repercussions for that whatsoever. Like, she in the outs of the community. There wasn't any, like, I thought maybe what they're going to do is they're going to settle where she was, like, on board and the rest of the community is like, "Fuck you, you've always sided with these people." And there's, like, a real divide in the community, but it's essentially Grandma McGee versus everybody else.
Yeah, as I recall, there was an implication that she'd be killed.
Or banished or something.
Yeah.
But nope, all was forgiven. Grandma McGee's like, "I can't stay mad at you."
Right.
"I can't stay mad at you. You're too damn good at the gun."
Yeah.
So she explains, so Cindy gets taken hostage, even though she's outraged that Tara came back and broke her promise. She explains they have no choice, or they don't know they do have a choice. You can get your guns taken, mm-hmm. or behind door number two, get your guns taken and help us fight with them.
Right.
Those are
Which
your
is
choices.
No choice at all.
Yeah. And it's at the choice is at the end of a barrel of a gun, just to underline the point. And also there's a time limit for the discussion, which I felt was kind of ludicrously short. Like what did they expect Tara to come in there, lie in wait for Grandma McGee? Good thing Grandma McGee decided to come into her cabin just then and give her exactly 2 minutes to plead her case. This very complicated, on the surface bullshit case.
Yeah. Well, she was going
the
for her morning dump.
Off. What?
She was going for a morning dump.
Ah.
They knew her schedule.
Gotcha.
She knew her routine. She's regular.
She's regular.
Say what else you will about her.
As a German train schedule. Like, you just know when it's coming in the station, when it's pulling out. They overrun their time, and explosions go off. And I don't know. There's just something about this whole interaction that feels false.
Uh-huh.
Like, not only is it a unilateral ultimatum, but the fact that they have to take every single gun and bullet these people have, that's bullshit. Like not being able to leave them a couple rifles and a couple of pistols for self-defense or hunting or whatever seems unnecessary. Like it's there's no reason Rick would do it. I don't believe in real life that Rick would do it.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't.
They could have at least traded him. Like, said, here, take our guns. We want your guns.
Yeah.
Because
like,
they had like 6 or 7 rifles.
Or we'll leave one of our people hostage. I mean, I don't know if you can do that, but you got to do
collateral.
Yeah. You got to do something, because it just does feel overtly evil, and there's no way to really put a nice point on it, especially since it'd be one thing, I guess, if Rick was taking this for Hilltop and the kingdom and himself, because I guess I trust all those people, but there's this other third party, the garbage people, that seems shady as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if there's any justice in the world, like, a more interesting show would just have Jadis and the trash people take kill Rick's people, take their guns, and then rule the world.
Yeah.
And then we'll just follow the trash people.
All right.
I don't know if that's a better show now that I think about it.
It's going to be a show. It's going to be a spinoff called Trash the Walking Dead. And we'll be watching that for 15 seasons to
come. Right. Yeah. That sounds like something AMC would approach us to do.
Trash the Walking Dead.
Yeah, like we got the Talking Walking Dead. Hardwick's got the brown nosing, ass kissing. Can you guys do Trash the Walking Dead? Because we're losing a lot of viewers. Or maybe
you're
onto something.
Yeah, you can recapture eyeballs.
Hell, you guys
AMC.
Got people listening to podcasts or shows they don't even watch.
Right. You want to? Okay, that's a show for AMC that I would do.
Uh huh.
Trash. If they just want us to come on and shit on the show,
Trash
for an hour,
the Walking Dead.
Call us. If anybody knows the execs at AMC, call us. We'll do a show.
We were ready, willing, prepared to serve.
They need to recapture those 7 million eyeballs they lost, or
they
do. 14 million eyeballs.
Right. So explosions go off in the background, and most of the women, 99.7% of the women, run in the opposite direction of the explosion. There are 2 or 3 battle-hardened warrior women that we met. They seem to be the chief enforcers.
Yeah,
shotgun wielding. I mean, I don't know how to explain except to say they're the tough looking women.
Yeah,
that run towards the danger, and they are quickly taken hostage by Daryl at Jesus with an assist from Eric and Aaron. Michonne continues to provide Overwatch with her sniper scope. Tara gets hilariously taken by Grandma McGee, who has, I'll say, a unique and distinctive way of holding someone at gunpoint.
Oh, does she? I didn't notice.
She's got the weird arms forward, but at like weird 45 degree angles, with the shoulders hunched, the ass out, the back curved. Like, she looks like she's ready to take a fastball from a major league pitcher, except for instead of a glove, she's got a gun stuck in there somehow.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. The others of Rick's group rustle up the rest of the women, and Rick begins to address the prisoners and tell them, hey, this isn't a lose-lose situation. He doesn't get very far before Tatiana, Grandma McGee, damn it. She's just Grandma McGee.
Yeah, Inigo Montoya grabs her.
Grandma McGee comes and says, I got Tara as a hostage, and Rick's like, meh. I mean, kinda.
Yeah.
And Rick's like, whoop, whoop, we're still taking your guns. And Michonne.
I mean, that's the proper way to tell someone, look, we're not backing down here, right?
Like, uh-huh.
Yeah, you got our person. So what? That doesn't change anything. We're just taking your guns.
Right.
Like, yeah, you can kill her. Whatever.
And, like, you know, there's have you ever seen Weird Al Yankovic's Amish Paradise?
Mm-hmm.
where he's making fun of like the original video of
Coolio.
Sweating. And it's just like just a preposterous amount of moisture running off his face as he's singing the.
Yep.
This is Michonne up in that tree. Uh-huh. Like she's just like because she doesn't have she's a terrible shot.
Yeah.
And she doesn't have a clear shot at all.
No, Tara's head is right there.
It's just bobbling like in and out of the field and like
the only thing worse is if Negan was standing in front of him.
With Lucille like bopping
around.
She's like, oh God, I hope I don't have to take this shot because I'm going to kill Tara.
Yeah. It looked like she wanted to though, because Tara had to tell her no, Michonne, no.
Right.
And A, I don't know how she heard that. Like
yeah, right.
How Michonne's scope amplifies sound, I'm not sure, but she heard it. And B, she would have missed the shot anyway. Killed Tara.
No, it's so funny because it's like it's appropriate. Like it makes good sense because Michonne has no confidence in her ability.
No.
And she shouldn't.
No, she shouldn't.
Like I've seen her way miss zombies. I've seen her struggle to hit the Cupid doll prize.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still she's not quite there when as we're about to see.
Yeah.
Grandma McGee goes on a tirade, justifiably so, what in my opinion about how this is a raw bullshit deal and how they maybe shouldn't, you know, remember the last time we went against the Saviors. And Michonne from her Overwatch position sees the Sea Walkers advancing, the crew of the Davy Jones advancing on them. So Cindy clocks Grandma McGee upside the head. The other warrior women step up in line with knives, and the group just mows down wave after wave of very admittedly cool-looking walkers. Michonne gets slightly better at shooting. She takes a shot, hits a walker in the chest before she reloads and manages to beam him in the head.
Mm-hmm.
Progress. Daryl, for some, everyone's using automatic weapons, and Daryl is he's sticking with his crossbow.
I feel like it's a waste of potential.
Father Gabriel killed more zombies than Daryl, and this is stupid because Daryl. That's this. I've seen him use automatic weapons. Like he uses the crossbow preferentially because A, it saves ammo, and B, it's stealthy.
Right.
But they just set off these huge ass explosions and are just lighting up the woods, man.
Uh huh.
Don't be too proud to use a rifle. But yeah, Father Gabriel kills more zombies than Daryl. That's just not right. The little girl, I can't remember what her name is.
Rachel.
But she's running up, kicking zombies in the nuts.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
But on the second time watching, why would that make a zombie fall to his knees?
It shouldn't.
Like, that's the way.
Did she kick it in the leg? Is it possible?
It looks like she kicked him right in the nuts.
It really does look like it.
And then the zombie falls. It's like, wouldn't that be funny if there's still enough nerve connection that, like, you can still kick a zombie? That's like their weakness. Anyway, she goes around running and she kicks the walker in the nuts and stabs him. Grandma McGee at the end says, all right, this is impressive, and my granddaughter has our mean right hook, but we're still not fighting with you. Take your damn guns and go.
Like, are you still in charge if you get clocked to the fucking ground and half your team steps up and says, we want to fight?
Yeah, this group now has...
Are you still in charge?
Everybody in charge. You got three women with a knife, and they got all these guns and stuff, and...
And you fume and storm off. Like, you're not in charge anymore. Cindy is in charge now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't understand why Cindy won't just say, yeah, half of us are coming with you, and we're bringing all the guns.
Because, you know, she's willing to defy them before. You'd think the fact that she defied them first and suffered no consequences would further embolden her.
I'm sure
Seaside's going to join the fight. It's just a matter of time. I don't know what will have to happen to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Negan comes back to Sasha's cell, finds that he's dispatched Davey. She's lying on her ass because she's not even going to try to knife him. He takes the knife from her because he says... smartly, that he doesn't fully trust or believe her statements against Rick and the fact that she wants to join him. In fact, he's heard a little bird whispering to his ear that Rick and his company are up to no good.
Who's now, the bird?
I'm assuming this is the horseshit silent scene we saw between Gregory and Simon from last week.
Okay.
That's the only thing that really makes sense in my mind. Because otherwise...
Still not convinced there was a silent scene, but okay.
There was a silent scene.
I mean, there was a silent scene. I'm not convinced anybody said anything. Yeah.
Oh, do you think?
I think Simon's mean mugging, and yeah,
his mouth was moving.
Well, his lips were moving.
Okay, it could. So Do you want to entertain other options? Because it could be...
No, I just wanted to say I'm not totally sure that's true, but go ahead.
Okay. Because I saw some people speculating maybe Jadis is double-crossing Rick, but that doesn't seem... Yeah, the Romulan sub-commander of the trash people.
Okay. She has a name? Is that a real name?
I think that's her name, yeah.
Okay, whatever.
And I can't even tell if people are being serious anymore. But here's because the theory that advanced this is like, well, Jadis has got the same... consonants and different vowels from Judas. So this is the group.
Oh my fucking, I just want to die.
I know.
I just want to die when I hear things like
that. I know.
That.
You actually heard me because like at the point, do you remember when I was doing research and I said, this is the stupidest fucking thing I've ever read, which is impressive when you think about the many years I've been doing this. I read that comment. Jadis equals Judas. I'm like,
wow.
QED, motherfucker.
Yeah,
QED.
So does Jesus.
Yeah.
How about that?
No, that would be Jadis.
Jadis?
Yeah, you got the D in the middle. It's got to have a D in the middle or it doesn't work, man.
That's true. What
are
am
you,
I thinking?
Moron?
Right. So here's the other option. Is it Gregory? Because he had that discussion with Simon last week, right?
Who,
about
wait,
like
what the fuck are you talking? That's why I just said Gregory.
Did you just say Gregory?
Yeah, because he had that.
I thought you were talking about Jadis.
Yeah, no, but the first option I said is Gregory because he was having the mime conversation with Simon.
Okay.
Remember how the camera zoomed way out? Like
I totally
Lawson?
Remember
okay.
that, yeah.
But you don't remember the conversation we had about it 60 seconds ago.
No, I don't think you were. I did not think that that's what you were suggesting. But okay, all yeah. Right. So, I mean, he had that conversation with Simon. But it's weird to me because he looks at the map of the, like, presumably, like, to go tell Simon, hey, something's up here.
Which would make sense because Simon just presumably gave him directions to the place.
I guess whatever he tucked in his pocket, it's the magic word to get in. Presumably there should be some instructions on how to get there. Mm-hmm. But they show that after Negan says, this little birdie told me this thing. So, like, I don't know if they're messing with the timeline in this episode and the things that are happening after it sequentially in the episode are actually before it.
But I'm literally suggesting that the only reason they zoomed out and gave us a Lost in Translation moment is because Gregory further went on to say how Hilltop was complicit in all the stuff that Rick's done.
And then Simon tells Negan.
And then Simon tells Negan. And now, Gregory wants to pull like the emergency ripcord because Maggie is completely humiliated and showed him up. But in fact, speaking of that, before we move, Negan says, I want you to find a win-win solution to help get Alexandria back on a straight and narrow. And Sasha seems like she's about to throw up when she realizes that she's going to be stuck. But I don't get it. Like, I don't quite understand all the connections here. I guess she killed the zombie because that's what you got to do. She's not going to let this guy eat her face off.
Right.
And
that's
then
like
is
the
she
worst
pretending
way to, die.
To join Negan to gain his trust so she can fulfill her mission? Because if so, why does she look so dismayed when he goes, I need you to find the win-win for us? Does she think that he's going to force her to go there and, like, kill an Alexandrian person to prove her loyalty? I guess that actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think so.
But she looks pretty sick and shaken up.
Mm-hmm.
So is Gregory. Gregory is back in his office. He looks all shaken up. He calls for he's poring over his map of Virginia, like you said. I assume he's trying to find the location of the Savior Complex. He calls for his manservant, Cal, and says, get ready for a road trip, buddy, and pack a bag. I'm guessing they're going to the Savior Complex.
Yeah, why pack a bag?
Because he wants to stay there, maybe? Like
he's gone for good?
I mean, it seems like there's no way he can maintain leadership at the Hilltop.
Yeah.
Like, he's being exposed left, right, and center, and Maggie continues to consolidate her power by not trying to consolidate her power, by just working for the public good.
So maybe
try that, asshole.
Right.
Win a few hearts and minds.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that'd be nice. I mean, how can you win the hearts of people whose name you don't even know? But yeah, I could see that happening. You know, he goes to the Savior's compound and he stays there and says, go kill the Hilltop because those are bad people.
Right. And he can stay. But Negan's not going to, I mean, he's going to have a tough, tough road ahead of him if he thinks Negan's going
to. I think he's going to be on the point system. He's not getting the cushy apartment like Eugene does.
Yeah.
He's getting the points.
Yeah.
He's working for that jar of pickles.
Yeah. He's going to be pickling with the best of them.
Yeah.
So Eugene comes back to Sasha to say, hey, I heard you picked the team Negan. Good call. There was a particularly offensive moment where he tries to say that this is what Abraham would have wanted her to do.
And then
she looks at him like, really? And he's like, okay, that's a lie.
Yeah.
Something I want you to do.
Yeah.
But Sasha begs Eugene, very unconvincingly, I thought, for a knife or a razor blade or a gun so she can put herself out of her misery because she's made a terrible mistake. She didn't know that Negan would make her work against her people. And
no, and I think the last bit, the close-up they show of Sasha here when she says, wait, yeah, she says thank you at the end of this. I thought that was a piss-poor piece of acting.
It was really bad. In fact, the entire conversation behind the door, I thought, was terrible.
And I don't think she's a bad actor.
I don't think she's a bad actor either.
Was either rushed or... I don't know. I don't know why they didn't retake that, because it was pretty bad.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it just seems so... And then you got Bear McCreary's evil synth kicking in. It just like... Yeah. If Sasha had a mustache, she would have twirled it. But she's not... The other thing is, she's not being particularly evil.
No. No, she's just trying to... She's being duplicitous.
It's just such
In the support of a good plan. Like, let's kill Negan.
So Michael Slovis only knows how to film the Mexico desert. Like, once you give him an actor to work with, he's like, I don't know. I don't know. It's weird. Weird performance, weird direction, weird acting, weird writing.
Yeah.
Rick takes all the guns and ammo from a very glum-looking seaside. Father Gabriel even says, like, and the viewer's like, do we really need all of this? And Rick says...
He backhands him and says, yeah.
Yeah, you son of a bitch. Yeah, yeah, we do. It's like, I don't know, Father, did you need all of your parishioners? Apparently you didn't need any of them, so how about you not second guess me? Discuss. Like, again, in no universe do they need all of the guns.
Well, okay, so they
is
here's what I think they're doing. So right. I think they're going to. So the first time they went, and they presented the trash people with this abundance of weapons, right?
And a pretty good haul. It's not this many guns.
No, not this many guns. Right, that's key. So like they present them, and they're like, not enough guns. Mm-hmm. In their fucked up trash people way, they said guns, not enough, not help. Goodbye. Some shit like that.
They look for things to make us go.
Right. And then, so this time, I think their plan is to take two-thirds of the guns, go to the trash people, and when they say not enough guns, whip out the other third and say, here's enough guns. You're helping
Man,
us.
Man, if Rick can't bargain six guns for the cat statue, then he doesn't know what the hell he's doing.
This is a joke, obviously.
Right.
But, yeah.
I mean, I think a stronger point would have been if Rick, I mean, this would have been very Machiavelli, but something I'm willing to accept from these desperate people is if Rick explains to Father's like, look, no, we don't need all the guns, but do you want to take 90% of these people's guns and then watch on your back for the other 10% while we're trying to take down Negan?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what happens if they have a Sasha or Rosie? I mean, that would be... If they had a fucking writer that had a half a brain in the whole goddamn writer's room, that would have shut Aaron the fuck up. Because Rick would have taken this thing with Sasha and Rosita. Like, what if they got a Sasha Rosita?
Yeah.
You want to deal with that while we're doing this campaign against, like, and then...
It's at least an acknowledgement from the leader of this community that something bad is happening.
Yes, and they would get, the it would be, could be a light bulb movement for Father Gabriel, and it would all instantly, like, you know, again, like, that would have been... ideal, and they didn't do it, so whatever. Carl, out of nowhere, he's like, hey, it's time for a callback, girl.
Yep.
It's previously in the episode. Remember when we were talking about who we killed? Well, you know what really sits with me? People I didn't kill.
Oh.
So there's two notable...
He's talking about his dad.
Yeah, I had the chance. I could have shoved all 48 ounces of that chocolate pudding
right down his sick throat.
In a person to come, I think that would have been enough. I think it would have been enough. Filled his lungs full of pudding, he wouldn't have lived. I would like to see a zombie Rick come back with his lungs full of pudding. Like, what kind of noise would that make?
There was a zombie in this that had, like, just some goo coming out of its mouth.
Oh, yeah.
It was real gross.
Maybe he died of a fatal pudding inhalation.
Probably. That's most likely.
Prove me wrong, internet. So where was so he didn't kill, I forget, the blonde woman that Rick immediately kind of took a shine to before he woke up, came to senses, and realized Michonne was the woman for him.
He started with
his older, douchier son. Like, Carl didn't kill him. Ultimately that got his eye shot out and a bunch of people dead.
He didn't kill Nicholas. He had abundant chances.
Did he have a jump on Nicholas?
Oh, I'm sure he did at some point.
And then...
But most importantly, he didn't kill Negan, right?
Right.
Like, he had the opportunity.
That. He totally choked.
Yeah.
So, to the extent that... I don't know why these people think that killing Negan would instantly make their lives better, because it just seems like Simon would stand up and maybe even be better. He'd be a better Negan than Negan.
Yeah, maybe so.
But... whatever, that's the delusion. I guess killing Hitler during World War II is super important.
Right, I mean, that's the reason you don't send your commanding officers into battle in the front lines.
Because,
right?
Even if there's another leader like Simon, who's to say that he's going to be able to, like in the minds of the saviors, that might be a crack in the facade that leads them to question. And
right, it's
ultimately
morale
everyone,
thing.
Even
yeah.
in brutal dictatorships, the authority derives from the people. And yeah. there's only so much they can take before it's like, you know, fuck this, time to revolt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and, you know...
I think it would take more than one domino, though, to do it. Negan
isn't,
like, the
only link
in the chain.
But when you think about it, like, Eugene could totally kill Negan,
yeah.
putting that pill in his food, and he's dead. Uh-huh. Like that's the power the people have. Like, you just can't watch your back when literally everyone around you is trying to kill you.
Yeah.
Which would be an interesting thing for The Walking Dead to explore someday. Tara pledges to bring all these guns back when it's over. I don't know how she can keep that promise, because Rick has promised to trash people who seem to be wholly unaccountable for what they're going to do with these guns. Cindy says, I wish she could come, but she can't because Grandma McGee says no. And like, if Tara had dialogue written by a writer with half a brain, she'd shoot back, well, I'm glad you didn't roll that way when your grandma said to kill me.
Uh-huh.
Because, like, what the hell? If this is what you want to fight for, like, I mean, I guess there's precedent for that. Luke Skywalker was going to farm moisture for God knows how many years just because Uncle Owen said no. Do you want to join the rebellion? No. All my friends are joining the rebellion? No.
Are you advocating for the slaughter of the Oceanside people, of everyone who's not on board with the goal?
Yes, pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
It's wholesale genocide. No, I'm saying, like, I don't understand why she just didn't leave. Like, go rebel. You're
right.
Clearly
right.
a rebellious teen.
Yeah.
So...
yeah, at least Cindy could have gone, you know?
Yeah, Cindy
and
Rachel.
The short hair... girl with the military jacket,
right?
Could
the
have
tough
come
looking,
with him.
Yeah, all the tough and ready to rumble with.
I mean, they've all shown that they're on board with this. I don't know why they don't take a little personal agency and go do it.
Yeah, yeah. Because again, Grandma McGee is the Rick of the group, and I guess that's going to have to be good enough for me.
I guess.
She says, "Thank you for saving my ass on multiple occasions," and Cindy says, "Well, thank you for being part of the resistance." Rachel then asks, the little girl Rachel asks, if they're leaving them any guns, and Tara flips her off, which...
Love it.
But this is the cherry on top of this weird Sunday situation.
You're right.
You're denuding right. this community of all their guns and a hostile takeover, and this little girl calls you out on it, and you flip her off. Like, where did this piss and vinegar come from, Tara? What about this interaction made her feel any better about fucking these people over?
I think it's how stubborn and stupid they were, you know? I mean,
the one person in the group was?
Well, all of them. I mean, all of them here have a choice. None of them have to stay here. None of them have to go along with Grandma McGee's insane plan to just hide in the woods forever. Like, they could go join the Alexandrians.
I've seen this group do lots of stupid stuff in the name of Grandpa McGrimes.
Sure.
So, yeah. In fact, this...
But that's the thing. Like, they're
fucking,
working for the better.
This fucking Tara... What did she or did she not join the governor's crusade?
How
can she turn around and be like, hello, pot, this is kettle, you're black to these people? Like, there's
yeah, I mean,
so much character history that would show that she is sympathetic to the situation these people are in. And instead, with all that rich history they could tap from, they decide to do the callback of her and the little girl shining each other on. It's frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that this is a little short-sighted. Like...
And it's
not into the future, but into the past, right? Like,
yeah,
they
yeah.
don't take into account all the stuff that Tara's been through, but they're more focused on the recency of, like, Rick's mantra that they can defeat Negan, and it's for the greater good,
and also,
these people are not on board, fine, fuck them.
Tara comes and talks about her girlfriend being killed, so I get it. It's
right.
This war is personal to her, too.
But that's also extremely recent. It doesn't take into account, yeah.
Yeah, I just feel, again, like that this was a tone-deaf attempt at a humorous callback when they could have gone for something a little bit more important. But
that said, I think it's hilarious when grown-ups flip off children.
Sure.
Hilarious.
Sure. So Rick says, hey, do you feel bad? And Tara's like, nope. Did you see me flip off that 9-year-old? That's me not feeling bad at all.
Yeah.
I'm going to sleep like a fucking baby tonight. Sasha has a plate in her cell full of all kinds of hot dogs, pickles, sausages, and other phallic. Like, she's got a plate full of phallic food. Let's call it what it is.
Yeah, that's fair.
And Eugene comes visit her. Speaking of giant dicks, he gives her the poison pill that he cooked up for Negan before he played 6 hours of Yara's Revenge and realized that the Negan's wives were playing him. And Sasha obviously isn't thrilled with this development. And Eugene talks a mess about, like, if it's your time to check out, you can check out. And here, I gave this pill to you. Do you think that Eugene figured out what Sasha was after? So he's found the way to honor the request in case it's legit, but also.
No.
Because the other thing is, like,
no, I think Eugene has no clue what she's playing at.
Okay, that's kind of dumb.
I know.
Especially given how bad her performance was.
And how quickly he sussed out the plan of the other three women who came to him. Like,
to be fair, it did take a whole night of popcorn and Yara's Revenge.
I mean, he had a night, right?
Yeah, yeah.
She's been in there a while.
So here's the thing about Sasha and why I continue to be frustrated with her character. She sees this as a real setback where... I see this as, like, you are delaying your mission by just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've got a way to poison Negan and kill him within 15 or 20 minutes if you can just get this into his food or drink.
Mm-hmm.
That opportunity will present themselves. Like, if you wanted to go, like, full-on gross mode, you could agree, you could propose to be his wife or something and get it, like, you know, sacrifice your dignity for a chance to get up close and kill him, which she was ready to throw away her life, so...
I don't know.
I think
there's some kind of implication here when Negan's like, oh, tomorrow's going to be super interesting or whatever.
Yeah,
I think there's an implication.
She's going to have to go to Alexandria and do something awful.
Yeah, that this is going to come back on their group real quick. And that if she had had a piece of glass or a knife or whatever, she could have taken him out immediately there. But also, she doesn't know anything about the wives, right? Like, she doesn't see the path that we see as an audience member to getting to Negan. She just assumes she's going to be a prisoner forever.
Yeah, that's true.
And used against her own group, so...
I do feel like Negan is hitting on her pretty obviously, and like she would probably be able to pick up on that just from that. But that's a fair point. And also, I don't want to dismiss how revolting it would be to even go along. Like even
there's
if you're able to kill him in the middle of foreplay, that still would be
right.
Pretty
like
big.
You remember Maggie and the Governor, right? In
oh
those
yeah,
scenes, that was
and this is
not
again
even
the man
on the table.
To beat her lover to death. So I understand that could quite possibly be considered a fate worse than death. So.
Yeah.
The group shows back at Alexandria, finds Rosita with a surprising amount of fucking attitude for someone whose bullshit plan just exploded in her stupid face.
Yeah, for the second time.
Yeah, yeah. And we find out that Dwight is in Morgan's jail.
Yeah.
Daryl instantly goes feral badger on him, which is now like the third time his anger has almost like, you know, even if you think this is a trap, like you can still like interrogate him, get a lot of valuable information, do all kinds
right.
of stuff. And Daryl's just like, nah, he's going to go right to rip his throat out. He's restrained by Rick. Dwight says, I want to help. Rick says, oh, yeah, you can help by getting on your knees. And he puts his gun right in his face and take note, Grandma McGee. This is how you hold a son of a bitch hostage at gunpoint.
Right.
Okay.
Not
his weird hunchback weaver stance bullshit.
Right.
Just take your gun out and you point at their head.
Uh-huh.
Easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
Yeah, you got to get them at a disadvantage.
Also,
you know?
Dwight's gone through the hard school of Eugene dick biting.
Oh,
Rick doesn't
you're right.
know that the most dangerous place a man can be is on his knees.
It's true.
I'm just assuming that between now and next week's episode, he's just got a crotch full of Dwight's face. Trying to tear his little grimes off.
Could be the season finale.
That's right. I heard it's going to be a 90-minute episode. It's just 90 minutes of biting and screaming.
Just the sounds of gristle and just going to be the worst.
Yep.
Yeah. Rick spinning around, Dwight spinning around. Just it's like when you grab a kid by the arms and spin him around.
Yeah.
It's going to be that, except. Just attached to the groin for 90 minutes.
Which going to give first, Dwight's chompers or Rick's manhood? On the next Mythbusters.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the end of the episode.
All right.
The end of the episode. this is the point in the show where I advertise the club. And I got so don't skip because we actually have some free bonus content at the end of this here podcast. And and we don't have a spoiler section, so you can safely fast forward to the very end of the episode if you don't traditionally listen to the feedback. And enjoy it. We took a clip from last week's Lunch with Jim and Aaron where we talk about the new Star Wars movie and especially what they're going to do about Carrie Fisher's death and how that'll affect her portrayal of Princess Leia, probably for the poorer. and if you like that, that's something we do every week. It's a little thing where we interact with the fans on Friday during lunch hour. It's called Lunch with Jim and Aaron. It's one of the very many features that you get by joining the club at club.baldmove.com. In addition to ad-free podcasts, other great premium content like Quip and silent movies and bald movies, spoiler reviews, you also get the satisfaction of supporting independent and podcasting. So go to club.baldmove.com and check out the free clip of the Lunch with Jim and Aaron at the end of this year podcast.
Are we ready to get into feedback?
It seems like the thing to do this time in the podcast.
Okay. We start off with John W. this week. He says, I noticed that the Saviors didn't put a burlap bag over Dr. Carson's head when taking him from the hilltop to the sanctuary, but they did it for everybody else. Do you think there was a reason behind that, or is it just another flaw in this mediocre show?
They thought the dense exhaust fumes from the pipes would obscure his vision.
Fair.
Just going to roll coal Fair. All the way from there, and just you can't see shit.
Mystery explained. actually, here's a series of emails here.
Okay.
A couple of them. I guess that comprises the series. G says, was just listening to your podcast speculation on the distances between Alexandria, Hilltop, Saviors, etc., and that got me back to wondering what I was thinking back at the start of the season. Why don't Rick, Michonne, Carl, Maggie, etc. just pack up one day and leave Alexandria and make their way up to Pennsylvania or somewhere to get away from Negan? Walkers clearly don't seem to be a threat. They once were on the outside, so why not avoid an all-out war with heavy casualties and an uncertain outcome and just leave? Then also, David G. has a couple of thoughts. This one is relevant here. If everyone has issues with the Saviors, why don't all these people just leave and go to Alaska or Arizona? Why do they have to be so close? Like, once all the men died in the Seaside group, why didn't the women all just leave instead of hanging out?
Yeah, I mean, they went to D.C. because of Eugene's bullshit.
Right.
After this, I'm kind of – that's a good point. Like, hey, everybody, we're going to get on a bus and get a convoy, and we're going to go to goddamn Nebraska.
Yeah.
We're going to go to North Dakota. Mm-hmm. We're going to go where there's no people. And we're going to have these teaming hordes of zombies. There's not enough people in North Dakota to have a zombie herd.
It's true, yeah.
So just like, yeah, like, you know what? Fuck all this fighting for civil. Let's just go and how hard is it to bang a couple of corrugated, you know, all due respect to Regis Cold Rolled Steel. You know how much I love the man and his work. But how much effort is it really to bang up some corrugated metal to have a rudimentary fence and just go where the people ain't?
I mean, they can swing by Alexandria and pick up Toby, right?
Yeah, and get some of the take your solar panels and like as much of the, you know, I mean all the stuff that makes Alexandria cool seems like it's something you could transport. The, you know, the giant McMansion style houses, do you need those to be happy?
There are a billion of those anywhere.
Right. Not in North Dakota, I don't think, but
yeah, I'm sure there are like subdivisions.
Or you know, it's like go up to Canada, just do something. There's like so much space. If you want it.
I feel like the biggest issue, I prefer to think of this like the Oregon Trail, right? Like
they're all going to die of shit.
You don't want to die of dysentery. It's like the most embarrassing way to die, especially when it's like emblazoned on your tomb, your headstone for all of eternity. Like, here lies Rick Grimes, died of shitting himself to death.
Have you seen the new Dave Chappelle Netflix special? He's got a hilarious take about
dysentery.
Yeah. Like, you know, diarrhea, like that's like the, you know, that used to be the Grim Reaper.
Yeah.
Like what's that? Yeah. You start squirting, and it's like, well, time to get my affairs in order. This is just not going to stop until I die from it.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's no good.
Yeah.
But that's how I think of it. All right. Okay. Brian in Denver says, I'm talking about last episode, I think the character development on the show is mostly shit, and I have a serious doubts about their ability to pull off another emotional death, especially if they stick to the single storyline per episode framework, which we didn't talk about, but they kind of dodged nicely here.
Yeah,
it worked, for the most part.
Yeah, they had plot A, plot B, and for what it was actually plot C. They even had a hilltop plot.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Three plots in one episode. My God.
It's all due to Michael Slovis.
I think so. He says they royally fucked up Glenn's death, and we at least cared about him. Are we supposed to shed a tear when someone like Aaron dies? Hey, you don't care about Aaron?
I would be...
I do. Maybe Eric. I don't care about Eric that much. But, I mean, but in as much as I care about Aaron, I guess I care about Eric.
If Aaron started up the waterworks, I'd probably... Plus, I got to have the Aaron's solidarity there.
That's right.
But there, no, to his point, there is very few... Like I feel like Sasha and Rosita are dead to me now. Eugene is dead to me. I like Maggie. I like Carl. I like Enid. I like Rick. I like Michonne. I like Aaron. And by extension, his boyfriend. And that's about. And I got Daryl's getting to be dead to me. He's so fucking one note of late.
Doing anything interesting with him? Yeah.
Like the only time, the last time I felt something from him is when someone's hugging him. Oh, Carol, I still like Carol.
Yeah,
Morgan dead to me. Ezekiel dead to me. Tiger fake. Trash people never were alive to begin with.
Yep.
So yeah, I take his point.
He's also saying, you know, it's way too late at this point, but do you think the show would have benefited from some type of Lost-style flashbacks that showed what the characters' lives were like before the apocalypse?
No.
I think the thing that, like, Lost flashbacks did so well is they showed it by showing us who the characters were in a past life, kind of before the events of that series. It made us understand why they were making the choices they made.
Right.
And this show, they seem to lean on this idea of we can just tell you why. Like, we'll have a character sit down and explain to you, oh, yeah, when I was, you know, 8 years old, this thing happened to me, if they even go that far with their characters.
Right. Like the Tyrese Memorial, my dad made me listen to NPR.
Right. It just doesn't, it doesn't hit as powerfully as if you see it, right?
Plus, the other thing about why they're making decisions, 90% of them can be attributed to, well, you're living in a zombie apocalypse where there's no effective rule of law.
That too, yeah.
Like, you don't need to delve much deeper. Like, oh, you know, it's his Shakespearean community theater actor experience that's causing Ezekiel to make this decision about... No, like, no. It's the fact that he's gone slightly nutter because everyone's walking around out of their grave now.
Tearing
people alive apart.
I mean, even in Lost, it was kind of like that. Yeah. I mean, you had...
That's true.
You know,
they're in an extraordinary situation.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Right. The rules were thrown to the wind, but like each person came at the situation from a different angle, and you thoroughly understood what those were. And I think that's a really good way to tell that story.
Mm-hmm.
Say what you will about the end of that series, but the flashbacks were really well done. And they do a couple of flashbacks here. Like Morgan's a prime example, right? Like we see. Not the flashback to before the event, but the flashback with the stick man and Tabitha.
Right.
Yeah. So we get a little bit of insight into why he is the way he is now.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I mean, I don't really trust that they would have the same impact on this show as they would in Lost.
And that's the thing, because, again, it seems like they miss the threads that tie their characters together when they're kind of right in front of their face.
Yeah.
Because they're just living in the moment, man. They never actually think back like, hey, we're 7 seasons into this. What? Where have we been? Where have we come from? Where are we going?
Or
like
they live
They're like fucking Vin Diesel. They live their lives half season at a time.
Right. It does seem like that for a lot of the characters, and sometimes they go the opposite direction and they're like beating this dead horse of a character flaw. Right. Like Morgan. Okay. Yeah. We remember your time with Tabitha. Now we've seen that, but we're gonna spend 3 more seasons. Really just hammering that point home.
Right.
And it can get exhausting after a while.
Yeah.
Teresa in Austin says, quick question about last episode. The show established that Jesus had scored walkie-talkies and uses them to keep tabs on the Savior's movements and plans. He even shared them with the Alexandrians. Why then did the Savior's manage to make a surprise visit on the hilltop? Was Jesus too busy pontificating his lost youth with Maggie to monitor the walkies or at least delegate that job to someone else?
I mean, I get they're battery powered and like battery is precious, but Maggie's talking about generators and stuff and replacement generators. Like,
you can find a battery charger.
Yeah, and this is the most important thing to keep running. Your intelligence, like the Allies. Like, you know what? We got to conserve energy. It's part of the war effort. Let's shut down the Enigma project at night.
Right.
Because, you know, why do we need to listen to the Germans all the time? It does seem like that would be mission critical.
Yeah.
Keeping those walkies going.
I would think so.
Good point. Good point.
We finally get to this episode, and we'll start with the negative. There wasn't a ton of negative this episode, so I think people in general liked it, but Dan from Philly did not. He says, this is without a doubt the dumbest season / episode ever.
I'll agree that this is, it's hard to think of a dumber season in total.
Yeah, I just don't, I don't agree with the episode thing. I think there are light years worse episodes in this half season.
Oh, sure.
Trash People, the prime example. Anyway, what
exactly...
We did
dodge a trash-shaped bullet. Like, they could have gone...
I'm surprised, yeah.
Like they could have traipsed up to Jadis or Judas and had a five-minute yeah. bullshit negotiation with her.
But it's one of those, like... What is that show with Angelina... That movie with Angelina Jolie where she curves the bullets? It's like one of those bullets.
Yeah, Wanted.
Like, that thing's coming back. That's boomeranging back next episode, right?
Sure.
There's no way we don't see the Trash People next episode.
Right on.
That sucks. All right, I'm going to go on. What exactly was Maggie supposed to be doing? Planting or digging up that stalk of poison ivy leading to that awesome display of writing that was her and Gregory's conversation? Or, of course, Sasha, who somehow ends up in a cell, then in a horrible Andrea callback, waits for Rapey Davey to turn in a pitch-black closet instead of dispatching him right away. Yeah, that was a little silly.
If you're going to kill the guy, like,
kill him. I guess she was still making her decision.
Like, oh, well, but it's you really had to think about the choice between slitting your wrist or letting a zombie eat your face off. Like, even Negan's like, kind of messed up, but hey, I get it. Like,
right. Kill Rapey Davey, and then maybe
think about yeah. you know, slitting your wrists or whatnot.
Right.
Sure.
Then he says, we have Rick and his band of douchebags who are not only still driving in that ridiculously stupid gas-guzzling RV, but using their limited supply of explosives for absolutely no reason, and in the end, not even taking the beach team members that want to fight back with them.
Hmm.
I could literally list 10 more idiotic examples, but I'm just so fucking tired of it.
If you have 12 people in an RV that gets 12 miles to the gallon, is that better or worse than taking four sedans with three or four
okay.
people apiece? Like, I'd have to really do...
Yeah, yeah.
And Daryl's bike's getting 45, 50 miles a gallon, so, mm-hmm. you know, per person, that's still not bad.
You're trying to say RV equals intellect? Is that what you're trying to say?
I do. Sometimes the gas guzzler can be their only rational transport.
It's true. And he finishes up, the simple fact is this season was a complete waste of time to a series whose actors' contracts have a limited shelf life.
I do agree with that. It feels like... I mean, if you'll recall, the one glimmer of hope that I had for at the end of last season was that they had all signs of getting right to the point and really taking it to Negan this season.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still been the same cat. I mean, we wasted three episodes on the attempted breaking of Daryl
yeah.
and the apparently successful. I mean, we haven't really talked about that. Is Eugene broken or is he playing a game so deep he forgot how he's playing it?
No, I think he's broken. I don't know that it was, it's so much, I wouldn't even describe it as broken. I'd describe it as...
He's just same Eugene he always liked.
Yeah.
He survives by any means necessary.
Yeah, he doesn't survive by fighting. He survives by giving in. And it's,
yeah, and bullshit and lies.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't know what they're doing with him. Like, if there's going to be a scene where Rick's storming the compound and... You know, Eugene has to make it. Is he going to redeem himself? Is there going to be a heroic sacrifice? Is he just going to be mowed down?
I think what they're trying to do is contrast him with our other group, which is, you know, he's working for a very personal solution to this problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if it does me good, I don't care what it does to anybody else. Whereas our group, the Alexandrians, is kind of like, you know, it's going to cost us, but we're going to do the right thing here. We're going to put down this menace.
It just seems like they keep making lateral character moves with him instead of advancing. Like it seems like they wanted, and now they've retarded his character in like the sense of making him go backwards.
Right.
That he had developing to where he's going to become a fighter, or at least someone you can count on. And
yeah,
like is that interesting? Because they could do the same thing with Father Gabriel tomorrow.
That's true.
Like when the chips are down, like he runs home and locks everyone outside of Alexandria. Like would that be entertaining? Because that's essentially what Eugene's done here.
Yeah,
I'm holding
right.
out hope
he's
got another angle he's playing.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise it just seems like, yeah, it's in character, but it's not an arc so much as a weird zigzag back and forth.
Yeah, I feel you there. I just think you're going to be disappointed by holding out hope that Eugene is some, like,
I think to the extent
hero
we continue
in disguise.
Watching the show, we're going to be in for disappointment in the future.
That's true. That's true. All right, Joel says, finally, a good episode that's not a premiere or finale. Crazy, right? Also, I don't know if you guys get the reference, but it certainly feels like Gregory is becoming Mr. Leahy and Maggie is Julian. Do you know
Julian
what he's
Leahy.
Talking about?
No, I do not.
Okay. Well, then we're going to move on. Thanks for the reference, Joel. Some people out there got it. I'm certain of it. Steve from Tennessee says, I've been frustrated with The Walking Dead a lot recently, but this was an entertaining hour of television.
Oh, that's a Trailer Park Boys reference. Which I've only seen the movie, and I don't. Yeah. It's okay. Super funny, but I don't get that reference.
Me either.
Is Leahy the bald, the kind of bald park manager?
Never seen it. I don't know.
Yeah. All right.
Steve from Tennessee says, I've been frustrated a lot with The Walking Dead recently, but this was an entertaining hour of television. Not perfect by any means, but this just felt a notch above what we've been seeing. This feels like what The Walking Dead has always had the potential to be. And without getting into it too much, I think a very large part of what would make this show better is to simply shorten the seasons to 10 episodes. Yeah. I mean, preach on. We've been talking about that for seasons now.
Yep.
You know? How this is just, there's so much filler in this show that could be cut out.
Or
at least 6 episodes a season.
Or they could just advance the, like, stop the filler and just, there's plenty of plot ready to go.
Right.
They're just, and it's so weird because, as you said, unless they've got some kind of hidden sex tape with a goat with Andrew Lincoln, they're not going to get him for past 10 seasons.
Oh,
no way.
Uh-uh.
There's already, like, too much plot, from what I can understand, for them to burn through in these in a hypothetical last 3 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So what are they going to do? I just don't think they have any fear of blowing the whole show up and keeping The Walking Dead going and try to build, like, make a Godfather offer to Enid and Chandler Riggs and, like, keep going.
Maybe. I mean, I heard recently there was somebody talking about how the show... Somebody involved in the production, I don't know who it was, I didn't read the whole article, but the headline was that they were saying the show is going to go for 20 seasons.
Well, right.
Which, you know, you look at it and you say, okay, we're in season 7. We're coming to the end of season 7. Most shows would be ending right now. They would have wrapped up. This would be the series finale. For even long shows, when you think about the shows that are really successful and really just... nail it right up to the very end, like a Breaking Bad, like a Wire, right? We're talking about 5 seasons in those shows.
And also, they knew where they were going.
Yeah.
Like, we have an end game. That's why this doesn't go for 11 seasons.
But we're 2 years past that already.
Right.
And they're showing no signs of wrapping this thing up. So I would be prepared, like we've said before, for them to just run this into the ground, doing perhaps not even 16, but more episodes as it gets longer.
Right. Well, now they've got 16 episodes of Fear the Walking Dead a year
too. Right.
Which is what you always said, like, boy, the dilution of an already pretty shallow pool of talent working on these shows is frightening.
Yeah. JK says Negan tells Sasha that he has learned that Rick is up to something. So who is the snitch? I think we talked about this already, the source obviously being Gregory. I could probably have skipped that one, but I wanted to mention JK.
There you go.
And Barry C. from the UK says, when the gang got to Alexandria, it was an interesting novelty to come across a community who have managed to avoid violence and the harshness of the apocalypse, and was quite well contrasted against our team of badasses. But now, with the Hilltop and the Kingdom both showing that their numbers are horribly untrained, I don't know about the Kingdom. I don't think they're untrained.
Yeah, they seem like they take it pretty serious.
Yeah. He goes on, it's starting to seem really implausible that so many people would have avoided killing at least walkers, especially when you think of Rick's famous 3 questions, which seem to have suggested that that to have survived this long, you almost certainly have killed walkers and people. I know the argument. I think he's getting at the Gregory hasn't killed anybody or any walkers.
It seems like we were in during a live watch last night. I'm like, you'd think if you... we're going to be a post-apocalyptic leader, even a sham leader, that you'd want to get your hands dirty sometime just to prove that you can do it.
Yeah.
Like, how in the world can he be this, you know, blushing violet or shy violet around zombies at this point?
Yeah.
It's like, it's straight. It is.
That kind
it does
of leader.
Seem very weird that he is not in the years since this, the countless attacks the Hilltop has undoubtedly suffered, mm-hmm. that he's just hidden his mansion the whole time and come out and been like, oh, good job, guys.
Yeah.
Like they, and
I was in the shower.
Yeah.
You guys really cleaned up, huh?
Yeah, man. It's just so loud in that shower, the water going. And then I had my shower cap on. It's like rain on a tin roof when that thing's on. Like, what? Come on.
Right. Right. Alex F. says, can't The Walking Dead just try for one damn second to stop running the exact same tropes over and over and over? It's like they have a spreadsheet checklist in which they simply follow the well-established flow chart. I say that all because that's all this episode was. To wit, Aaron's BF suddenly showing up for a fight, dead, and dead in short order, I would definitely assume. He'll get killed in the finale as one of the now required finale deaths. Great. Basically, at this juncture, we're just waiting for important characters to die. None has a real purpose or any reason why they keep on keeping on. So they do the math, and they see which characters they can afford to axe in the big finale. Great. Another Walking Dead trite trope.
Speaking of doomed gay couples,
uh-huh.
You get any sparks off Jesus and Daryl?
Did they interact this episode?
They were setting up the explosives together.
Oh, right. No, I obviously barely noticed those scenes.
Yeah.
You know what I was noticing in those scenes? I was like, man, this is a really coily rope, coily fuse or whatever it
right.
is. Like, I can see Norman Reedus like actively putting his feet on the coil as he goes by because mm-hmm. it's just so coily mm-hmm. it would all just come right up.
Right.
It's not going to stay there when he lets off it. This is a prop.
No. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So that was all I could notice.
Like, I feel
scenes.
Like they just handed him like 100 feet of like whatever stiff wire they got from Home Depot the day of.
Yeah.
Like, it's still in a shrink wrap. And one's like, what the hell am I supposed to do with this? Oh, just bury it. What?
How am I going to do that? It's all coily.
So it's like, well, you want me straight out of like one of those curly phone, like, oh God, I'm just realizing it's probably been 15 years since phones have had curly phone cords on them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
He says, is there anything we can look forward to in this season's finale? I mean, really, what could it possibly do for us? The start of a war? That's basically the last four episodes have been anyways. Yeah. I mean, they've been prepping for war. I think actually starting the war would be something, at least.
They are
an attack,
literal doomsday preppers. That's what this show's is.
They started too late.
Yeah. They're not doomsday preppers. They're post, what do you call post preparation?
That's a good question.
Yeah. Like what's the idea?
There's
of like,
no such thing, but
you can't prepare.
No, you can post pair.
You can just pair. You post pair.
Yeah.
Doomsday post pairs.
Oh, it's hit the fan. What do we do?
That's it. Like, after this thing fails on AMC, the History Channel will pick it up.
Yeah.
You know, it'll just be like, you know, post-apocalyptic post-pairs.
Okay, I saved this one for last because I wanted to. There's a bit of community news that goes along with
Whoa.
It. Matt T. says, so they did it again. Most of this season has been garbage, but last night's episode was good. They somehow managed to check in on multiple storylines, and shockingly, because they checked in with multiple storylines, they had to trim the fat and give us a compelling episode. I wonder if you two can do me a favor and stop podcasting this show. I swear, I'm only watching it because you two are podcasting about it. I used to love hearing you two shred the show for what it's become, but now it's become a bit depressing. This show should be good, but it's not, and it's not going to change. I want to stop watching it, and I need you to stop podcasting it. Can you do that for me? You know,
this is a game. You guys don't know, but this has become a game of chicken.
Well,
are the hosts going to blink before the listeners do?
The community has not blinked because maybe a week ago I would have considered it, but after the astounding news we got about Double Aaron's tattoo.
Oh, yeah, we haven't
There's
talked
nothing
about
we can
that.
Do.
We haven't talked
We're
about
stuck.
That.
Yeah, so one of our listeners in the community, Double Aaron, promised...
Back when we were doing a Save the Bald Move campaign, we were trying to raise, like, you know, $25,000 to... Because we got fucked over on our Amazon deal.
Yeah.
If this is all, you know... Go to amazon.baldmove.com if you want to catch up.
Right.
But he's like, if we get our goal that he'll get a tattoo, a bald move tattoo...
And we hit it in like a day,
yeah,
2 days or something.
Yeah, we smashed it. And then we ended up raising like $45,000. And he came back I'd forgotten.
Hadn't heard anything, yeah.
Yeah, like, I bets, whatever.
And I didn't, you know, I don't expect, I don't hold people to that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm like, that's that's a crazy thing. And, you know, I tell, I don't have a bald move tattoo. But the crazy motherfucker did it. He, in fact, if you're
in the most awesome fashion.
In the live recording and you missed it somehow when we talked about it on lunch, this is a photo of the tattoo that he got.
So it's basically me and Aaron
at the mics,
at the microphones. As zombies.
Yeah.
And he's got this tattoo on his leg. He showed pictures of it on the forums.
Yeah. And it's righteous looking. It's awesome. It's one of my favorite things I've seen. Like, you've got a screwdriver sticking out of your head. My brain's exposed.
Yep.
It's in fact, we're kind of wearing the appropriate outfits, I think.
And he has a story to go along with it, too. He talked about how... you know, the first podcast he listened to of ours was Watching Dead.
Right.
And how it kind of got him hooked and everything. So I think at this point, we're in it for the long haul.
Can you imagine what a dick move would be to announce just stopping the show a week after a guy got a tattoo featuring this particular thing? Like, I'm not Rick, man.
I
can't go into AA Ron's community and just take everything from him.
No. And I'm not and Tara. Then, I can't flip the bird on the way out.
Flip him off. Like, here you go, AA Ron. Woohoo.
No.
I can't do it.
So I guess we're stuck and you're stuck, Matt. Sorry.
We're all locked in here together.
Yeah.
Hey, come on. You want to know you want to see how this train wreck comes into the station.
I think so.
Want to see how many times it flips over, how many lives it destroys.
Yeah. And that's it for feedback.
All right.
So I think that's it for the episode. If you want to send feedback in, you can do so at watchingdead@baldmove.com. Send me an email. I will get it considered for the next show.
All right, that's it for this week. We'll see you next time for the finale episode. Until then, enjoy this free clip from last week's episode of Lunch with Jim and Aaron. Joshua Heather from Omaha said, both are a long way off, but are you looking forward to episode 8 or the Han Solo prequel more?
Oh, Star Wars. Which one am I looking to do more?
I kind of want to say episode 8, but on the other hand... The guy they got playing Han Solo is pretty good, and Donald Glover as Lando is fucking inspired.
That's the best draw for all of them. But, yeah, I mean, episode 8, for sure, is, like, the one that I'm more anticipating. I think...
And not for nothing, how are they going to handle Carrie Fisher being gone?
That's a good question.
Like, there was just a debate I was reading today about whether they should CGI her or recast her, and people were, like, fucking losing their mind about the idea of recasting her. And I'm like, I don't see that as disrespectful at all. Like, she died.
Right.
It'd be one thing if they're like, oh, she's too fat and old to play Princess Leia. Bring in the hot 50, you know. Bring in the girl from Parenthood or whatever.
Or what's her name from House Cards? Bring in Robin Wright.
Right, bring in Robin. But she died, and I feel like the CGI is almost more disrespectful.
Oh, you think so?
I would. I mean, did anyone...
I mean, is it disrespectful to Grand Moff Tarkin, to Peter Cushing?
I kind of argued that. Yeah, I didn't like that. I would rather see them recast someone with good makeup and that's playing the character.
Like, I don't really care. I don't think either is disrespectful. Like, you can make it convincing, go for the CGI. I don't care.
When they recast the Oracle and the Matrix, no one lost their mind. Now, I don't think the new Oracle was as good.
Mm-hmm.
They recast Dumbledore when Richard Harris died. I actually prefer the... Michael Gambon, is that his name? I actually prefer the new Dumbledore. I mean, what if they had been like, oh, fuck, I guess we just have to CGI Dumbledore.
Mm-hmm.
And you got his Dobby-looking fuck and a long, long beard. Like, I don't know. I'm all for recasting Carrie Fisher. Find another, you know, that has the right kind of gravitas and feistiness of the Princess Leia character. Betty White. But I would love to see Betty White in the general costume.
Uh-huh.
That would be awesome. I'm trying to think of who would be a really good, like, stand-in for Princess Leia.
Margot Martindale. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
I can see that. That's
maybe so.
That's certainly a galactic visage to take seriously.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yep. She's giving you a glass of blue milk and saying it was in the glass the whole time.
I think they should get a body double and CG the face on.
Of Carrie Fisher?
Yeah, the worst of both worlds.
Add posthumous insult to injury, but have the slave Leia body double.
Oh, God. Yeah. It's just Leia in the slave costume the whole time.
That's disrespecting the memory of Carrie Fisher.
That is.
If you enjoyed that clip of Lunch with Jim and Aaron, go to club.baldmove.com for lots more premium content.